You are listening to the News Project for the week of February 24th, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This week's podcast brings you these stories. Town meeting updates for Londonderry, Weston, Windhall. What is Until Help Arrives? The Travel and Recreation Council makes a road trip. And the Taconic and Green holds its annual meeting.
Londonderry is one of those towns that does town meeting day the old-fashioned way, with a floor meeting where the articles are discussed and voted on off the floor. Their meeting will be held at the town hall on Middletown Road in South Londonderry on Tuesday, March 3rd, and starts at 9:30 a.m. 19 articles await the voters who turn up, and their warning contains some unusual ones, or at least different ones from the past year. There's also a couple of budget items that voters will want to be aware of. So we met up with Tina LeBeau, the town treasurer, and Shane O'Keefe, the town administrator, to go over them.
And when we start with the budget then, is the budget going up or down, staying about the same, tax rate?
It's going up. We figure about a penny and a half on the municipal tax rate. We don't have a lot of changes. We do have one thing in the budget that's the Dairy Woods project. And Shane can explain that a little bit more.
Sure. That's a culvert project going on at Dairy Woods Road. And roughly $320,000 project. We did get grant funding already of $175,000. And we're therefore looking for the taxpayers to cover the balance, which would be $146,000 and change. But we do have another grant in for that. So it could shake out that the whole project net to the town is $86,000. But this is something that's been in the works for quite a few years. And we're finally actually going out to bid this week. And any decision on would be subject to town meeting vote, of course. That's the big ticket item in the budget. So a net difference of about almost $150,000. And in the budget, we'll do an explanation of this project so that people can weigh whether or not they support it or not. But we'll have those numbers, and we'll have an estimate of who is bidding at that time, in fact.
There are three articles in particular that may prompt some discussion. A proposal to launch a 1% local option tax, another proposal to establish a reserve fund to offset anticipated expenses coming later on with the cutting down of ash trees that have been victims of the emerald ash borer, and a third, this one an advisory article, which would explore developing legal cannabis-related businesses.
So turning to the warning then, you have a couple of interesting articles here, and one of them, as you mentioned the other day on the phone, is the local option tax. What was the background of that? Do you think that Londonderry is at a point where a local option tax would be desirable?
We talked about it last year a little bit and decided this year to do a little bit more research. And based on the calculations on the state of Vermont's Department of Taxes website, we estimate that we may be able to make another about $120,000 a year. To put into the general fund to offset taxes.
Yeah, the way it's spelled out is any savings we get would be to reduce taxes. So what it is in the eyes of the select board, is a way to spread the cost of municipal services, not just to residents, but to visitors and other sorts of business activities that we're not capturing at this point, but there are people using those municipal services.
Cannabis?
Yeah.
That was actually a petition that was circulated through the town, and they asked to have that article put on the warning.
Right. It's a non-binding article in that it doesn't request the select board really to do anything, and it's not of a municipal nature, but it's looking to support the idea of cannabis industry. It's really a way of getting a discussion going at the town meeting. Article 7, as you brought up, has to do with the emerald ash borer. This past year, Londonderry was was discovered that the emerald ash borer has, in fact, begun its infestation of ash trees in town. And we're trying to take care of that, be proactive about it. There will be costs involved, and we're trying to take care of those trees as necessary up front before they become an emergency and they're more expensive to take care of later on. Kevin Beatty in our community is our emergency management director, as well as our tree warden, and he's been on top of this and really been leading the way, not only in Londonderry, but in the region, on trying to battle the infestation of the emerald ash borer.
Another article would convert the collector of delinquent taxes from an elected to an appointed position.
Brought in-house, really, Tina has been handling that in many ways, the in-house part of that for some time, and so it's it felt to be a lot easier to do it in-house and have people be able to come right here to deal with it, as opposed to having an external delinquent tax collector.
Voters will also elect several other town officers, including two members of the town select board.
We have two board members who, one board member is not going to be returning, the other one is somewhat on the fence, so there is certainly a vacancy on that board, and so we encourage anyone who's interested to put their hat in the ring. Put together a pretty good budget, and again, the big ticket item is a capital expenditure that's been in the works for a good long time. We've got grant funding for it, so it's a good opportunity to take care of that project now.
For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. We've been traveling all over GNET country this week, heading to all the 11 towns in our coverage area. Today we headed up the mountain to Weston, best known perhaps for its playhouse and as the home of the Vermont Country Store. Across from the town green and its classic New England downtown is the town hall, where the select board meets, and where we ran into Jim Linville, the vice chairman of the select board, and Tim Goodwin, a former state representative and a current select board member. Together, they walked us through the warning and the budget proposal Weston's voters will tackle when they meet for their traditional floor meeting-style town meeting, which will be held at the Weston Playhouse on Tuesday, March 3rd, and will start at 9 a.m.
Bottom line hasn't changed much. I mean,
no.
We're dealing with a number of items that are a little uncertain, like the Trout Club Road culvert, where we have a culvert that has exceeded its useful life, and we need to replace it. The state is going to give us some money, so they say, for the replacement, but until we get the hydrological study from them, we don't know whether we're going to be able to replace it with a round culvert, which is what we have now, or we're going to have to go to a box culvert. The Article 18 in the warning deals with that, and we've got enough in that article to pay for a box culvert if we need it, but we're hoping that we don't. So, but other than that, I think the numbers are there are no big issues. It's, you know, just more of the same.
So the tax rate would probably be staying roughly the same as it was last year, assuming voters...
That's our hope.
Yeah, that's...
That's our hope.
That's the way it looks. There's not quite enough information at this point in time to nail it down, so to speak.
We bumped up the highway fund. Let me see if I've got it.
We're moving in the direction of getting a little paving done that some people are going to be happy to hear about there.
Right, good point. And that's Article 8. We had been appropriating $40,000 a year to a high to the a highway maintenance fund, which is basically for road paving, because all the dirt road maintenance just happens, you know, year by year as needed. There's another example of a situation where we've been getting reimbursed or state grants for paving, and those come along at unpredictable times with unpredictable amounts. And it seems as though if we get grants at the rate we've been getting them for the last 15 or 20 years, we are not going to have enough to maintain the paving that we've got in town. And if I was a betting man, and we all are, I would not bet that the state is going to increase its allocations for to the towns for paving. So the increase to the annual appropriation for the Highway Maintenance Fund is going up to address that.
Little Pump, we're looking for listers.
So is everybody.
And it's a great job.
That is an ongoing challenge that is only getting greater as I see it. And at some point in the future, we're going to have to face that and deal with it one way or the other.
Just a reminder, Vermont is also one of the Super Tuesday states, and voting in the state's presidential primary will also be part of the balloting voters will get to do on Tuesday, March 3rd. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. The town of Windhall will be holding its annual town meeting on Tuesday, March 3rd, beginning at 10 a.m. at the Mountain School in Windhall. Floor votes and Australian balloting voting will take place through the day. After the formal meeting is over, voters will still be able to cast ballots for elections of town officials until 7 p.m. Voters will approve or amend the proposed town budget on the floor of their town meeting, which totals about $4.25 million this year. That compares to a municipal budget last year of approximately $3.7 million. The tax rate, if the budget is approved, will go from about 41 cents per $100 of assessed property value to 48 cents. The primary increase is proposed in reserve fund additions to cover the expenses of repairing specific culverts and repaving roads. The 2019 town report and the town meeting warning are both posted to the town's website homepage at windhall.org for download and reference. Meanwhile, over on the school district side, some of the issues that made for some of the extended conversations in recent town meetings have stabilized to a degree. Windhall does not operate its own public school and tuitions all its students to various schools around the region, including Burn Burton Academy. The school board is anticipating having to pay for 187 students, but is building in a cushion of 15 ghost students in case more families move into town. The proposed budget's bottom line is a little over $3.8 million, which compares to about $3.4 million from the prior year. That will translate into a tax rate increase of less than 7 cents, from $1.71 to less than $1.78. That's within the historical range of recent years. The school tax rate peaked at $2.12 in the 2019 fiscal year, before dropping nearly 40 cents last year. We had a chance to talk with Jennifer Samuelson, the chairwoman of the Windhall School Board, about the road ahead for the school district.
I mean, I think the voters really have shown that they value having school choice. And the most interesting thing to me when I was really looking at the numbers of where we thought students were going to end up versus where they actually did end up, there was a lot of movement between the schools, public, private, independent. We really had students who were already in Windhall shifting schools, as well as new families coming in. And, you know, what that says to me is that our families really do value choice. And I think certainly at the tax rate where it is, that's something that I think it makes it very, well, certainly will hopefully make for a very easy town meeting. And this tax rate also includes us keeping our sitting town status with Burn Burton, which many families feel is very important as well. The one thing that I'm sure will come up is that we are using about $63,000 from the tax stabilization fund that we set up last year when we had our surplus. Which really highlights the importance of having a fund, as well as this is exactly the type of situation where we can use that to stay out of penalty and really save the taxpayers money.
For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Hey folks, it's Hoss from GNAT News. Today I'm in Arlington, and I'm actually sitting in an ambulance at the Arlington Rescue Squad. There's a really cool program that's about to be offered here, and today we're going to talk to Josh Williams, who's the executive director, and he's going to tell us all about it. And he is helping with the camera right now, so Josh, give me that camera back. Sir Josh.
Hi.
So what is it called?
The program is called Until Help Arrives.
And why is it called that?
It's called that, basically it's to teach lay people like yourself or whoever you're with. What to do until we, as a rescue squad, get to your emergency.
Right. So I live in Sandgate. Takes me about 15, 20 minutes to get home. So if my wife calls and I'm having a heart attack or something, it's still going to take you roughly 15 or 20 minutes to get there.
Correct.
And are those minutes really critical to me seeing you tomorrow, Josh?
Yes, those minutes are very important to an emergency. The first few minutes of that emergency are what's important. This program is designed to teach family members, members of the community, what to do until we actually get there for whatever the emergency is.
So, using me as an example, if I were having a heart attack, what's one of the things people might learn in this course?
If you were having a heart attack, this course teaches participants hands-only CPR. So it's compressions first.
Right.
And compressions and early defibrillation are the key factors in survivability in a cardiac arrest.
Right. So instead of everyone just watching me laying on the floor,
they could be helping.
They could be helping save my life.
Correct.
Right. Especially in these rural areas where it seems everything takes long to do.
It does. And that's the key part of this, is to get people to where they're doing hands-only CPR and control bleeding before we ever get there.
So what would you say are some of the major emergencies you deal with that this course is going to be so crucial for? I mean, you mentioned bleeding. I could really see that.
Bleeding. Yep. Bleeding, like you said earlier, cardiac arrest, choking, you know, so if people are choking and can't really hang out for 15 minutes.
Right.
You know,
right,
so we cover that.
Seizures, things like that?
Seizures, we talk about putting people in a recovery position, so put them on their side. That's all part of this course as well.
Okay. And it's, just remind us of the particulars, it takes, it's about an hour?
It is an hour. It's from the time you get here, it's about 20 minutes worth of classroom stuff.
Right.
And then the rest of the time is spent hands-on, actually applying tourniquets, using CPR mannequins to teach you how to do compressions. The bleeding control mannequin, it's there's actually blood, simulated blood involved with a tourniquet and the whole bit. So it's very hands-on.
And not that I would forget, but let's say I took the course, you know, in the coming weeks, and then is it going to ever be offered again, like if I wanted a refresher during
certainly.
Summer?
The goal is to offer this free class once a month. The best way we find to get this information out is to offer it consistently, and our goal is to provide it free once a month.
And I'm thinking this would be something I'd bring my whole family to.
Yes. Right now, we're limited to about 10 people in that class, just because of our physical limitations with the building and space.
Right.
It's bring the family.
The more the merrier.
The more the merrier, correct.
And just quickly before we go, how do I sign up? How do I go about finding out more information, things like that?
We list it through Eventbrite, through our Facebook page. That's the easiest way to find it. There is a link on our website to register for the class.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
You're welcome.
And thanks for doing this.
Oh.
There's nothing worse than being terrified, right?
Correct.
The state's Travel and Recreation Council is going on the road, making stops around the state to hear from local leaders and business owners involved in the state's travel and tourism sectors about how to boost the state's assets that attract visitors and maybe future Vermonters. The council made one of its stops at Hildene, the Lincoln family home in Manchester, on Thursday, February 20th, to learn more about Bennington County and what factors are in play here. Travel and tourism has been a significant part of the state's economy for a long time now, and it remains a very significant part of it. Recent numbers show that the state welcomed about 3 million visitors to the state last year, and their combined spending totaled about $3 billion. About 30,000 Vermont jobs are closely associated with tourism. Heather Pelham is the commissioner for the state's Tourism and Marketing Department. and she got things started by updating the audience about legislative initiatives underway in Montpelier. One important area is increasing money spent on tourism promotion, which the department hopes to see boosted from previous years to about $3 million, noting that Vermont spends much less than neighboring states on tourism promotion.
Now, how many of you folks were able to make it up to Tourism Day on January 15th? But it was a great start to the legislative session. This was an opportunity for folks to come out and really advocate for how much tourism means in our communities throughout the state. We had over 150 people participate, and I know there were some contingent from the South, so again, thank you for everyone who could participate with that. Quickly following after that, we got the great news that Governor Scott did include an additional $1 million marketing ask in his budget for this year. That includes the $500,000 specifically for tourism destination marketing behind our closest competing states. The budget for New Hampshire is up to $10 million. The budget for Maine is $17.5
million.
Oh my gosh. so we do have our work cut out for us, but we pride ourselves on being able to do a lot with a little. You know, when we talked to the legislators in terms of what we would do with this additional investment, we're talking to them about being able to expand our reach beyond the drive market and our closest fly markets right now. With our limited budget, we also are run seasonal campaigns in summer, fall, and winter. With an additional investment, we might be able to get closer on to an always-on type approach.
Matt Harrington of the Southwestern Vermont Chamber of Commerce, and who was also a member of the Travel and Recreation Board, along with John Burnham and Ron Mancini of the Manchester Business Association, gave presentations on how they were seeing trends in the Bennington County area.
Manchester and Woodstock alone make up 17% of all available rooms in the Vermont South area that, again, report to this document. This doesn't necessarily include little B&Bs or anything. This is a report that I get from the Star. And it's good to see the growth. We continue to see growth in occupancy as a state, as a region, because that's what we need. That's going to continue that tax revenue coming in to help support all that we do on a local level as well as a state level. So good results so far.
Travel and tourism matter a lot to Bennington County. In fact, to all of southern Vermont. As of 2017, the latest year for which data is available, the four southernmost counties in the state, Bennington, Windham, Rutland, and Windsor, accounted for about 40% of all the rooms tax generated in the entire state. The four-county region was also responsible for 50% of the entire state's second home property tax revenue. We spoke with Commissioner Pelham afterwards.
Well, in terms of supporting the tourism industry, whether that's in southern Vermont or all over the state, we definitely want to stay competitive. We are definitely competing with not only our closest New England neighbors, but really any place that you can get on a plane these days, you have the opportunity to choose where you vacation. So our job is to make sure that Vermont stays top of mind, that we are not only telling the whole world about our attractions, our outdoor recreation opportunities, everything that makes coming to Vermont a special place, but that we're doing that in an authentic way and that we're being welcoming in our messaging and that people really understand that Vermont really does have something special to offer, something that they can't get anywhere else, and just making sure that we focus on the fundamentals of the experiences that are available here in the state, so that when visitors come here that they really have an unforgettable experience is where our priority lies.
For the GNet TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. The Taconicon Green Regional School District Board held its annual meeting at the Dorset School on Tuesday, February 25th, presenting a budget of $33.4 million to area voters who will be voting by Australian ballot on Tuesday, March 3rd, Vermont's Town Meeting Day. School officials broke down the proposed budget to taxpayers with an emphasis on the sharp increases in health care costs following the loss of another plan they had recently developed locally with the teachers' union.
Premiums went up by roughly 13%, so that was already driving insurance costs, health insurance costs up. But with the statewide agreement, essentially it is going to have different impact on different districts. But I think it's fair to say everybody's going up. Basically all the employees, including beyond the teachers under the contract, all of our other employees also. have a greater choice of the healthcare programs that they take. So in the past, we may have had certain employees where we just provided a single person healthcare plan. Now we're going to need to offer them a family plan as well.
And it would be good for you to understand what our potential risk is under the healthcare change. So we did, but included in this budget was what we absolutely knew, which was $134,000 more in costs that we would incur. What we do not know is what choices will be made now that all of the healthcare options are open to all of the supports, anybody who works in our district, all the support staff. So we did some calculation on what a potential risk would be. I don't know if risk is the right word, but what potential costs could be. And that cost could be around $500,000 of an increase for next year.
The board and the audience heard from Mark Tashian, the headmaster at Burn Burton Academy, who spoke in support of the school's tuition rate, which is increasing by $500 to $17,990 from $17,490.
We are educating right now 543 students from the Taconic and Green School District. We are proud to serve this consolidated school district, and we are proud to serve roughly 750 students in total this year. Educationally, we offer 170 courses, 17 sports with 46 interscholastic athletic teams, and myriad performance opportunities. We recognize the incredible diversity of our student body and provide a diversity of offerings so that each student can find their place in this school. And I think that's a really important aspect of this school. Our doors are open to all.
There was also some sustained questioning by audience members about a proposed tax stabilization fund. In a separate article in the school district's warning, school officials are seeking to transfer an anticipated surplus of nearly $510,000 into the new fund.
Overspends what's been approved here, it could dip into that fund.
So it's not dipping into the fund. It would be used to reduce the tax rate in a budget document that you would see just at the same time that you're sitting just like here to listen to. So the only time it would get used is if the board decided in budget preparation to transfer some of that money into the general fund to reduce the tax rate, period. You're not dipping into it to spend.
So you're saying the board would propose something then to a subsequent annual meeting that the voters would approve?
Yes. The voters wouldn't approve the actual transfer. The board would decide to use it to reduce the tax rate.
We spoke afterwards with Sue Wilborn, the Bennington-Rutland Supervisory Union's business manager, about the tax stabilization plan.
So we had a surplus over the last couple of years, and rather than just return that surplus in this year's tax rate, we're suggesting that we set it aside, rainy day fund, contingency fund, for when we might need it. Specifically next year, there's a couple things that might happen in the FY21 budget. So we know that the state has a new healthcare decision that is definitely going to cost us more money. What we don't know is how much more is it going to cost us. And we didn't throw a bunch of potential dollars into the budget. What we put in the budget is exactly what we know for sure will happen based on current elections of staff. But those elections could change, and it could cost us a lot more money if staff choose to choose higher tier plans, say go from a single to a family plan. We did not, even though that there's a higher cost for that, we didn't throw a bunch of dollars in the budget because we don't know who will make those elections. So putting aside this money into tax stabilization would allow us to draw from it if we end up in a deficit next year because people made those choices. If we have a lot of people making choices to move to a family plan and we have to spend another $300,000 on healthcare in FY21 that we didn't budget for, we would be able to draw from the tax stabilization to apply that to the deficit rather than having to raise that deficit in FY22. If we have to raise a deficit, that raises the tax rate, right? So it's sort of a little bit of a savings account The other thing that there's always potential for is to have new students move in the secondary program. We saw that this year. Every year we do budget what we call ghost students. This year we, last year we put in 15 into this year's budget, and we ended up with an additional 20 students on top of that 15. So 35 students we didn't know about ended up with us. And
School Superintendent Jacqueline Wilson got a round of applause in recognition of her service as the school superintendent and her long career in local education towards the end of the 90-minute long meeting.
We're okay still with a class size of 10 to 13 kids at the elementary level. Does that feel okay to you or not? Because if it's, you know, there's going to be a cost associated with that. And we still have that in some of our, we have small schools, and we still have classrooms of 10 to 13 kids. And we can't change that until we do something differently. You know, does that mean further consolidation with our schools? Does that mean that Dorset and Manchester come together and they're a K-4 school and we're able to have some reduction in staffing? The big one is a regional middle school. You're not going to save. You know, we're not putting any extras in the budget. Our budget is built on, we take exactly, here's our staff, here's the cost of our staff, this is what our budget is. So we're not adding anything extra to that. It's what our actual cost is, and the money is around staff. And if you're going to, we're going to have to, as a community, have some serious discussions about what do we want programming to look like and what is the cost going to be associated around that program.
Afterwards, we spoke with Randy Lowe, currently the BRSU's assistant superintendent, who will be taking over the top job on July 1st, on her takeaways from the previous night's annual meeting.
The insight, the thoughtfulness that people in the community shared. I think there were great things for me to think about as I look ahead to next year about things we could include that we didn't, a different approach to being inclusive and transparent, but also, shedding light on who we are as an organization. There were excellent comments from people in the audience, and after the meeting, I had an opportunity to talk to people from the community and board members that just kind of got my wheels spinning, and I'm excited about what's to come. We're at Courier next year, and we'll probably be adding a few things in based on the recommendations of what suggestions were made.
Voting will take place on the Taconic and Green budget on Tuesday, March 3rd, at the polling locations in each of the 9 towns that make up the regional district. While there, they will also be electing 6 members of the school board. For the GNet TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.